Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Hi, I'm Kelly Corrigan. You've probably never heard of me. Maybe you did. I wrote some New York Times bestsellers. I gave a TED Talk. But the reason I'm in your ear now is to invite you to listen to Kelly Corrigan Wonders. We talk to everyone from Bono to Amy Schumer, Spike Lee to Rainn Wilson, Krista Tippett and Bryan Stevenson about purpose, creativity, well-being, and what makes life worth living. Follow and listen to Kelly Corrigan Wonders on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Tom Giordano on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. Philadelphia's Talk Radio 1210 WPHT, WPHT HD, WOGL HD3. Philadelphia, always live on the free Odyssey app. It's Dom time. Now, Dom Giordano.
All right, it is Dom time. Load it up, and there's breaking stuff. Great side question. Dan back with us. Henry back today. All ready to go. And just one little aside, and we'll get to talking a little bit about Trudeau. Is it really that Trump was the fight? He was on the ropes anyhow. But on a wintry day like this, I've only been to Canada a couple of times. I need somebody with some real insight. What is it that would have a wuss like Trudeau as the leader for 9 years and now on the ropes because he's gone too far in the contrast with Trump and they're afraid of Trump pushing back on him, that he finally announced his resignation today? I never understood this. It just doesn't seem to be that type of country. The rough and tumble of hockey, guys with no teeth, Molson. When we've done something associated with Canada, that's what we get. But there must be a critical mass of people who are progressive and their policies and their politically correct stuff. Toronto is one of the worst. It's the capital of this. And also I put up on Twitter for fun, since Biden's on the ropes, he's trying to torch as much of the country as he can as we wind down. Which one has actually been worse? Now, I would say that Trudeau has been worse, but given the advantage that he has, Biden, presiding over the United States, where we have all kinds of checks and balances, great economies, might versus Canada, I guess you could make the point that Trudeau has been, but he had less to work with. Biden has had everything, and look at what he's done. What a day, though, finally announcing he'll be stepping down. He'll be the minority leader, potentially. They have a parliamentary system. But here's Representative Kamak from Florida, I believe, on earlier today. She thinks that Trump was the final domino. And there is some of that because of the tariff, the pushback, him coming to see Trump. He did a conference with feminists saying, what kind of country are we, meaning the United States? They had their second chance to elect a woman, and they still wouldn't do it. I mean, come on. Here's what the representative said today.
I want to go back to the Congresswoman Kat Kamak of the great state of Florida. I would be remiss if we didn't get your immediate response to that.
Well, down in the South, what we would say, Harris, is bless his heart. Uh-oh. He has struggled. I don't know if you can hear me, but I just said, bless his heart. You know, as you said, this is no surprise to see Prime Minister Trudeau's resignation. This has been a long time coming. He has been championing Canada, much like here in America, America last. He's been Canada last in terms of policies. And Canadians are sick and tired of it. You mentioned the border situations that we have in Ottawa. We know of terrorist cells that have been discovered in Ottawa that have posed a national security threat to Americans. We have trade disputes, whether it is lumber disputes, potatoes. We have a number of commodities that we have struggled to actually work to negotiate a favorable trade deal. And so I think you're seeing a realignment happening in Canada, much like other places of the world, where the people of that nation are sick and tired of tyrannical rule. Look no further than what happened to those truckers when they spoke out against Canadian policy. employees and their bank accounts were seized. This is truly a global realignment of putting the sovereign nation first. And I think we have President Donald Trump to thank for that, because as you mentioned, and what Prime Minister Trudeau failed to recognize, was he had gone to Mar-a-Lago. And I think he sat down across the table from President-elect Donald Trump and said, you know, I don't think I'm qualified to handle this. And I think that that's why we're seeing him exit stage left.
That's essentially true. It is stage left. Off to Cuba. Does he go to Cuba immediately on a goodwill tour? Does he beat the Canadian winners? I wonder if he summers there. There's always been that sense with this guy. By the way, Canada, with that vast expanse, with all these natural minerals, materials, etc., if they were a state, remember that whole thing with Trump and the state? They would rank fourth from the bottom per capita as far as what they produce as far as income. They would be right there behind Alabama. Canada, yeah. Think of all that natural wealth. So what in the world would have Canada, this critical mass, be this so far left? To me, it's very hard to understand unless I was there and saw it day to day. Is it the settlement of Canada? Is it the organization? Is it the accent? Is it the no teeth? What the heck is it that provokes something like that? All right, a couple of other things too here locally. I see a little quiz. I'm not sure how they're going to answer. Dan's lived in the city. Henry is not. I know there's a suburban bias. I put up the poll last night. Since we're getting a fair amount of snow, might be 4 inches ultimately in some spots. The age-old question, and each year it goes down, the people that get it. This is conservative talk radio, supposedly. If you dig it out, you save it. You can put anything you want in there to save it. Your space. I'm talking about, you know, it's got to be 3, 4, 5 inches or more, not just a little snow under your feet. I thought still 80% would say, yeah, Dom, you're right. Some people are getting antagonistic. They're crazed over this. One guy asking me, well, where's your car when you're digging it out? What planet are you on? Your car's there. You're digging around it. You're making a big snow pile with in and out. And Dan was in, you know, South Philly's the hardest, but you were in Port Richmond. So, Dan, if you dig it out, is it savesies?
Not with the current parking situation, no.
Oh, my goodness.
No, no.
How do you get that? I'm talking about if it's not 4 or 5. I'm talking about there's real work involved. Even then, there's no limit. You don't think you should be able to save it.
Like go around the corner. When I was in Port Richmond, you walk around the corner, you expect someone to, you know, if the spot's shoveled out, not pull into it. I don't know. Because I know you're going to throw it back in my face, but I want to ask, why do you think you're entitled to keeping a public spot yours?
Yeah, but you dug it. You dug it out. And usually it's in front of your house or very nearby that you dug it out. I mean, that's part of it. Sure, you can say it's a public space all you want, but you wouldn't have that public space if I didn't dig it out.
I actually have audio of one time I fought with someone trying to save their spot.
Okay.
I don't give a damn what you think you are entitled to.
Well, the entitlement is somebody who just thinks they violate civilized norms and pull into a space. I'm talking about you really would pull into a space where, you know, when Luke and I have had to do it, some major snowstorms, you could have it almost waist high or close to waist high, the mound you put up on both sides of it, a giant mound, and you just have the smallest entrance and the smallest exit in order to get in. Let me turn to star witness Henry. So, Henry, you've been in the suburbs mostly, so, you know, you might have a different opinion of how difficult it is to do all this. You may not have to do it. So what do you say?
I got to be with Dan on this one. Like, I don't think you're entitled to a public parking space. Even if you did put in the effort of digging it out, I just don't see how that gives you a stake or a claim in that specific spot.
Well, I would say that it's communism on the other side.
That's communism?
How. Yes, in that I work and dig that out. How do you think you take advantage of that?
If I clear the leaves off of a public bench in a park and I sit down, should I expect to have that park bench saved for me when I come back?
No, that's a pretty loose. You're going to have to come up with a better metaphor or analogy for that. All right, so it's holding still, though, despite the change in the world here. I remember 10 years ago, it was about 90%. It's still been about 72.3 to 75% of people that say, yes, you deserve that. Now, this all started talking about this. When, and he's a good guy. The sergeant who does PR for the city of Philadelphia put all this stuff up, all these memes and all this. And we started to see a change. And again, particularly in South Philly, this would be frowned upon, meaning you would be in big trouble if you pulled into that space. They would see it. Now, today, I'm not sure what would happen. I'm sure people still wouldn't like it. And if you lived in the neighborhood and did it. So, Dan, suppose you're living a few doors down. You think you really have the right to pull in then, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Is this not just a neighborly thing?
Well, let me ask you.
It's completely unneighborly. You didn't work to go dig out your own space.
So what's the limit? How long can that space be open before, you know, someone's allowed to pull into it?
As long as the snowstorm goes on.
I don't think that's right. No.
Of course it is. I mean, you dug it out. You worked on it. This is a sense
How about a spot sitting directly in front of your house that you're normally pulled into, but someone happened to be parked there and then shoveled it out? Are you not allowed to pull into the spot in front of your house?
No, you still can't pull in. They shoveled it out.
But what if there's no other spot? I mean, you drive around the block four blocks and there's nothing, and there's still that one spot sitting right in front of your house. You're not going to pull into it?
You can't. And I'm telling you why, in South Philly particularly, that's really tight, et cetera. And yet there, more than any place, people were against stealing their spot. That's why you hear all these things of putting an anchor in there, a TV set, all kinds of chairs, just the wildest possible stuff.
If you do that, I think it should be saved. If you put something of
that's the idea.
Value of yesteryear in there, I think that's okay. But if you're just like, that's my spot, you know.
No, you always put something in there in South Philly.
If that's the tradition of putting things.
Yes, things in
there. Dude, you put a toilet out there, I'm getting out of my car, moving that toilet and parking it.
The anchor was my all-time. I think a broken, some kind of satellite dish was put in there, too. I've seen that. Jim Kelly, if he hasn't left for the day, he's seen other stuff. All right, here's how you get in. 855-839-1210. Coming up, we are going to talk with, the great Andy McCarthy. He's got a lot to say about Judge Marchand sentencing President Trump this coming Friday. Now, there's some developments in that. And why he feels this is just spiteful. It is all-time spiteful. Side question. Be thinking of the all-time epiphany. No time to give you some examples. Today is the Feast of the Epiphany. Epiphany meaning something that moves you to an insight, something that changes you, something you go, wow, never thought about it that way.
Yeah, my thing is a thought that you just have one day that completely triggers a different stance on life,
exactly.
Essentially.
Yeah. Somebody says something or you see something. And epiphanies are the great art of just about anybody. I'll give you one. The Sixth Sense can be real or it can be fictional. When he finally, spoiler alert, come on, it's been out 30 years.
Yeah, right. It's as old as me.
Yeah. All right, there you go. Yeah, what's the over and under? We should set that someday. I would say 5 years is enough. If you haven't seen it by then, come on. Let the conversation flow. Andy McCarthy next. Breaking down a couple of big things with President Trump legally and January 6th and the certifying vote today here on Talk Radio 1210. Welcome in, everyone. It is Dom time. 855-839-1210. You get in. Andy McCarthy on fire the last few days with Judge Marchand. He's on watch right now for the certification vote for January 6th. And he had a lot to say about the T word in the FBI. Their metric for determining if something is terrorism or not. Andy, welcome back. Happy New Year. How's the watch going for the certification vote?
Happily, Dom, I think it's going to be a quiet day on Capitol Hill. I think the biggest problem they have today is the weather, not the prospects for the ratification of President Trump's victory. And that largely is because of, I think, two things. One is the Electoral Count Act makes it much more difficult. The improvements that were made in the Electoral Count Act in 2021, 2022 make it much harder to raise an objection. But I also think that it's obvious enough that Trump won and that the lawfare was a big problem for Democrats. I think they understand now, at least national Democrats understand. I don't know about the ones in New York, but national Democrats understand that that was a really bad for them in the election. And the last thing I think they want to do is look like they're coming out of the box, continuing to fight Trump on that level.
So, Andy, I think I'd say Judge Marchand has not gotten that memo. This is spiteful. You make a great point that I haven't seen anybody else be as laser focused on the sentencing, which Trump has asked not to happen on Friday, of course, that he should be able to make a partial appeal. We all know what the Supreme Court has said here about immunity and how clear this is going to be on appeal. I can't even imagine in New York and all that stuff before the Supreme Court. So what is it you're proposing they should allow Trump to do rather than what Marchand is going to do?
I think they should allow him to appeal the denial of his post-trial motions insofar as he relies on the Supreme Court's ruling on July 1st that official acts of the presidency are not only immune from prosecution, but, and this is very important, Don, because this is the part that impacts this case, evidence of a president's official acts is not admissible in a criminal prosecution in order to prove acts that are not official acts of the presidency. I think what happened in the Bragg case, among the many outrageous things that happened in the case, was that Bragg recklessly offered and Marchand equally recklessly admitted into evidence proof regarding President Trump's practices in the Oval Office. In fact, two witnesses who were on President Trump's White House staff actually testified in the trial. And what, you know, Bragg and Marchand have been trying to say ever since then is, well, this was just harmless error to the extent that it really was relevant to anything in the way of Trump's official acts. They didn't need that evidence, at least on the case as the way that Bragg presented it. And I don't see how they can conceivably look people in the eye now and say it was harmless error to put this evidence in when Bragg's prosecutors argued to the jury that it was devastating evidence when they summed up.
Yeah,
so,
sure.
I think that even if you don't agree that the case needs to be thrown out, and you know their argument basically is that there's a significant enough quantum of evidence that was unrelated to presidential acts that even if they were wrong to admit that evidence, that it was harmless. I think Trump ought to be able to test that proposition on appeal. And what the Supreme Court has said is that immunity is one of those rare subjects in criminal prosecution. It's like double jeopardy in the sense that you don't have to wait until the end of the proceedings and the sentencing in order to raise it on trial, because the issue when you have a potential immunity violation is not just that you improperly convict someone, it's that you're not supposed to be able to put them through criminal proceedings.
Right,
in the first place.
Exactly. Andy, the other part of this, you just mentioned Democrats recalibrating. Some of them are the smarter ones, you know, and again, they have to camouflage, they have to recalibrate. But others can't wait to go on cable constantly and say, if Marchand does this, he is a convicted felon when he assumes the oath of office. I'm not showing up on January 20th. What kind of deal is this? He's a convicted felon. That's all they've ever wanted out of this, and they thought it would carry them home in the election. And again, I think this backfires again. If Trump can just skillfully say they will not stop lawfare, this is what this is all about. They can't help themselves, and I'm betting significant numbers of Democrats will take that bait and run with it.
Yeah, well, I would say this, Don. They use the convicted felon line anyway in the campaign.
Yes, right.
And it fell flat. And I don't think, you know, people like me have been out there making the persnickety legal argument for a number of months now that a person actually is not a convicted felon as a matter of law,
right,
until the judge imposes sentence and enters the judgment of conviction. So I regard it as something of a victory that when I first raised that, people were saying I was like obscure. And now it seems to be, it's resonating with people to the point, I think, that Trump's behavior in connection with the post-trial motions and everything that he's done strategically up to this point is only explainable if his main objective here is not to go into office as someone who is formally a convicted felon, because he could have dropped a number of these objections and just proceeded to sentencing and gotten on with his appeal. And there's a lot of us who think that if he gets on with his full appeal, not just the appeal of the immunity stuff, but all the range of errors that were made in this case, he's got a very good shot to get this case thrown out on appeal. But that may take a couple of years. And in the meantime, I think what's obvious here is he's fighting this because he doesn't want to go into office under a sentence, or more importantly, on the public record, formally seeking to be a convicted felon.
I hear you. What would you advise him to do, looking at the totality of this?
Yeah, I'm sure, Dom, that Todd Blanche and Neil Bove and John Sal are very good lawyers. They're the ones who have been advising mm-hmm. him on this stuff. And I'm sure they're trying to find a court in New York, hopefully the appellate division or the Court of Appeals, that will allow him to appeal the immunity portion so that the sentencing doesn't happen on Friday. He would have to turn to the federal courts if that doesn't work. And he's got a problem with that because he's already, when he tried to remove the case to federal court in 2023 when it was first indicted, a Clinton-appointed senior judge named Alvin Hellerstein denied it, and the Trump people elected not to appeal. So he's procedurally got a problem in the federal courts, but I think they should intervene, given that the Supreme Court's ruling didn't happen until July of this year. Well, I guess it's now last year.
Now, listeners may not, some of them, may not remember when we first, at least when I first fully heard about you, it was the Blind Sheikh prosecuting that case, precursor to 9/11 and everything else. Just an unbelievable legal effort that will stand forever. So you have intimate knowledge of federal prosecution and the FBI. The FBI first coming on and saying it wasn't a terrorist attack in New Orleans, and just the trouble they have when the Muslim faith is involved. And I understand the sensitivity of wanting to say, you talk about this, this is the aberration of the faith. Okay, but my God, at some point you just have to talk about terrorism here and how, inordinate number of cases seem to me to be fueled by some perversion of the religion.
Yeah, here's what I don't understand. I mean, we had, 30 years, Dom, of the troubles in Northern Ireland where, we had Protestant terrorists and especially Catholic terrorists in the IRA committing atrocious acts of terrorism against each other while they were having this squabble, which was mainly a faith-based squabble. It's hard to believe how little they were fighting over. I'm not saying people's religious convictions are unimportant. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying the tenets that we were taught, the differences in the Christian tenets that we were talking about at the root of that, if that's what it really was. I think it was more cultural and nationalist than religious. But I didn't feel like I needed to apologize to the IRA, and I didn't have a slightest qualm of conscience. I would have been the first people calling them terrorists. I didn't, it didn't bother me in the slightest that the government would say what was terrorism was terrorism. I didn't feel like they were smearing my faith by doing that. So I don't know, somewhere along the line, and I think this happened during the, it was in the water during the Clinton years when I was prosecuting cases, but it was in the Bush years. They were very sensitive to Muslim attitudes. And then when Obama came in, he actually worked on culturally changing the FBI and basically changing the instruction so that the agents were basically told that they shouldn't look for an ideological nexus between a belief system and acts of terrorism. And we all know what belief system they were talking about. They weren't talking, were a conservative Republican, they had no problem with blaming your ideology for terrorism.
Well, Andy, my favorite, and whoever Trump puts in there, I know this seems petty, but my first order of business, I want to know who in that Richmond office, drag him in, was sending FBI agents out to people going to a Latin mass, taking down all their information and surveilling them. My goodness.
Or why can't a Jewish kid walk across a campus?
Yeah.
Without, you know, to go to class. Without,
exactly.
You know, I mean, we have these civil rights laws, and contrary to what progressives think, the civil rights laws don't play identity politics. They are written in a way that apply to protect everyone, not just, you know, liberal interest groups.
Exactly. Andy, we'll be watching you on Fox today. Great to have you back. First segment of the new year. The column's on fire. I mean, the points that you make, even the layman can, or people that dropped out of law school like me, can pick up on them.
Thanks so much, Dom. Happy New Year.
Thank you. Andy McCarthy here on Talk Radio 1210. All right, I got a lot of snow-related stuff, too. Like, what happened to snow days? They're sacred. Usually I defend the Archdiocese of Philadelphia, but not on this one. They're holding Zoom classes today.
Ugh.
I'll explain Philadelphia coming up. Yeah, taking away snow days. Look, if you have X number of snow days, I don't know what the magic number is. Maybe more than three, certainly
four. I think it's
four.
Two.
No, I mean, though, if you reach certain numbers where it gets to be too much to craft it into the schedule,
right,
then you can do something like this if it snows. Short of that, though, you let kids have snow days. All right, but we haven't adjudicated yet the big issue of the savesies here, the final poll at Dom Show 1210. I think it's got a little more time. Let's go to Fred in North Wales on Talk Radio 1210. Good afternoon, Fred. Hi.
Good afternoon. Buona Capodanno, Dom and your whole staff.
Well, thank you, Fred.
I want to offer my full abiding support for your policy on the parking spot situation. All due respect to Dan, my cousin DeSantis, Henry, the whole gang. I mean, even a day like today, Dom, you and I probably walked to school. I grew up about a mile from where you're from. And if you probably remember the storm of 60 or 61 down in South Philly. We dug out, 2 days, and those spots had to be reserved for the owner of that vehicle. So, you know, again, all due respect to Dan, whether you're in South Philly, Mayfair, the great neighborhoods, Olney, and we're up in Montgomery County now, I couldn't agree with you more.
Thank you, Fred.
Fred.
This gets harder every year. Yes.
I was going to ask him if he had a special object he puts out there to say this
you,
is my spot.
Oh, it's for you. It has
spot.
To be an object. Okay.
I feel like, that's the line.
What's broken down is in many of these neighborhoods, everybody knew who they were, you know, particularly in South Philly. There wasn't as much movement, new people, et cetera. Everybody knew whose spot that was, et cetera. And there'd be people looking at telling, yo, you can't park there. That's Henry's spot.
Okay.
Yeah. But then I think the objects started because that broke down a little bit. So people started putting objects out.
Yeah. The neighborly kind of attitude broke up as more
yes.
people came in.
Yeah,
and then,
exactly.
yeah. All right. So
yeah.
that's, yeah. All right. I get what
yeah.
you're saying.
Now, look, if it takes you 5 minutes to dig it out, let's say, which is rare. I mean, you either have to dig it out massively or you don't. Then I kind of get that. Okay.
Yeah. Does it depend on the snow? Like if it's a real heavy snow, it's like, all right,
yes.
that's that guy's spot.
Yeah. I mean, if it's filled up and it starts to get to be 2-3 feet high, the design you made, like an igloo to come in there, how in the world can you take that spot? You just can't.
Yeah.
That's the difference. And I think some of the people in the suburbs have forgotten that. They don't have to. They may have a driveway. All right. But the Archdiocese of Philadelphia today, the grade school level, they have no school, but they're not on Zoom. Not that I want more kids on Zoom, but isn't it sacred to have a snow day, the first snow of the year? Or do they say, well, look, we got the technology. And I supported them during COVID. They did a good job. I'll tell you what Philadelphia is doing, which is just preposterous on this. You ought to build 2 or 3 snow days in. You get past them. Now you got a problem. Usually they'd make the school day longer to make it up, or they'd add on a day at the end of the year. But now they're all itching to try to show us that they're right on top of things. Give me a break. Now, with the nuns, who knows? I'd love to be a fly on a wall if you're at home with your kid or something, and they're in the Archdiocese of Philadelphia. I think it's suburbs, too. And they're on Zoom. Is it actually run in a way like the classroom would be? All right, coming up, we're going to talk with Mike Whatley, the head of the RNC. On a day like this, he's the guy that guaranteed election integrity, had the good sense to hire Linda Kearns. Want to talk with him about what this day means shortly, in which we see Donald J. Trump certified as 47th president. All that straight ahead on Talk Radio 1210. All right, it is Dom time, 855-839-1210. One of the real stars, key forces in this election cycle was RNC Chairman Michael Whatley. We thought on a day like this, when Trump is certified as 47th president, it's a great time to talk with him. And have we turned a corner here? What more has to be done to restore faith in this entire process? As I said, you know, when he hired here locally Linda Kearns, it really helped with our listeners restore the idea, yes, I want to vote. I'll even vote by mail. Some of them were going to hand it in, you may remember, by voting by mail. How much that had an impact. Let's go to RNC Chairman Michael Whatley. Chairman, welcome back. And on a day like this, we know President Trump's day, certified inaugural day, but we want to salute you also because here locally, I'm not sure how many other spots it worked this well. It was a convincer on election integrity to get our people to vote by mail. And every little bit of that helped to turn out and turn the election in Pennsylvania.
Could not agree more, and it's so exciting, right? I mean, because this is the day where formally, you know, he's going to be the president-elect, and they're going to certify the election, and then we'll have the inauguration on the 20th. But it's one more step in the process, all of which goes back to November 5th, all of which goes back to all the work that all of your listeners did, knocking on doors, making phone calls, signing up, going through the training, becoming poll watchers, becoming poll workers, and really it happened in Pennsylvania. It happened in every other battleground state around the entire country. The fact that we had 230,000 people sign up to be our election integrity team, the fact that we had 6,500 attorneys, the fact that we had tens of thousands of people making phone calls and knocking on doors around the country. You know, this is something where, yeah, Donald Trump won the election, because his name was on it. But every one of your listeners won this election because they participated in it and they made sure that we got out the vote and we protected the ballot.
Well, hopefully, too. You know, it's enormous, this election cycle. But building on this, the lessons of it you and I have talked about, the instantaneous challenge, even post-election, that we saw with Casey and McCormick, there are still Democrats out there that haven't learned that lawfare is going to redound against them. And I know that you guys are poised. Is there a lesson that was learned by you going forward that you hope to implement?
Yeah, you have to be in the room, right? Mm-hmm. And you need to plan these things in advance. You need to be there on the front end. You cannot just protest an election after it's certified. As we saw in 2020, the courts will not accept those protests. They won't move forward on those once an election has been certified. So it really took a lot of effort up front. We filed 156 lawsuits around the country. We had more lawyers in Pennsylvania than anywhere else. And the key is just you've got to tack it starting now. And so, you know, what we're doing, you know, I'm going to start with my first meetings in Las Vegas this week. I'm flying out there tonight. You know, we're going to start the 26th election cycle now. We're going to certainly have a fantastic celebration in Washington, D.C. on the 20th. We're going to have the inaugural address by the president. Then he's going to walk up Pennsylvania Avenue and he's going to roll up his sleeves and go right to work. And on the 21st of January, the RNC is going to go right back to the fundamentals of building the infrastructure so we can get out the vote and protect the ballot again in 26.
I referenced the Casey McCormick. In some ways, I saw that as a real showdown. I mean, you know, the macro level, because you had Mark Elias in here, and we know what happens. We had the unforced error of the Bucks County chairman saying she wasn't going to follow the law. all this redounds in the future, I think that vote count with McCormick and Casey and the way you guys handled it was the textbook for what you have to do in these situations.
Well, it really truly matters, right? And I think the fact is the law is very clear in Pennsylvania, and the Supreme Court had interpreted that law and put out their orders, and the Democrats came along and said, well, we don't want to follow the law. We don't want to follow the Supreme Court orders. And fortunately, the Supreme Court was able to readdress that. We won at the federal courts as well. 90% plus of the voters of Pennsylvania want the law to be followed. They want the rules to be followed, and they want the elections to be run fairly. And so, you know, we're not just going against the grain with this stuff. You know, when we talk about voter ID and we talk about states cleaning up the voter rolls and we talk about only American citizens can vote, you know, these are overwhelmingly supported by the vast majority of the voters in Pennsylvania and across the country. So we feel very comfortable knowing that we have the right laws in place and that we're going to have them enforced. Then we can trust that election. And that's so important for everybody across the country.
The voter ID is a work in progress, but I did notice here in Pennsylvania, Chairman, it seems to me this time around the voter registration purges have been bigger, and they've been on the money with this. When we have Scott Presler on each week, he gives us the count, and every time we see these purges, the Democrat registrations go down more than the Republicans. I take that as a welcome sign. In the past, we know that Pennsylvania, Joe Frazier, the former champion, has been voting in the last four or five elections. We joke about it, but how is Joe Frazier on that ballot to be doing that? And finally, we're seeing tangible results. But can you tell us something? We see Pennsylvania across the country. What is it that's a hopeful sign that this is sinking in?
Well, I think that the hopeful sign is the fact that Donald Trump won every one of the battleground states, and they were narrow wins. You know, we did not get a landslide in Pennsylvania. We had a 2-point win. We didn't have a landslide in Michigan and Wisconsin. They were 0.8 and 0.6%, you know. The fact that we were able to win all of those elections cleanly, even though they were very, very close, that to me is very upbeat. That is very optimistic. And, you know, what we've got right now with the House being in Republican hands, the Senate being Republican controlled, we have, you know, the right committees that are already looking at federal legislation to help clean up, you know, these rules. We're going into every single state. You know, we're going to be focusing, you know, again, starting now, you know, on the 26th elections and making sure that the rules of the road are set up the right way and that the laws are going to be enforced.
Chairman, thank you. Thanks for coming on here in Philadelphia routinely with us, that we continue to emphasize this. You're welcome anytime, and we appreciate the great work.
Well, we really appreciate you and your listeners. And as you know, we're getting ready to watch the ceremony in Washington where they're going to certify this election cycle, and then we're going to go into the inauguration. I think it's a great time to remind everybody that it's not just that you win. You got to win for the right reasons, and you got to do the right things. And we're so excited to watch President Trump take office on the 20th and immediately get to the work of the American people.
Absolutely. Thank you, Chairman. Enjoy Vegas and enjoy the inauguration.
All right. Take care, sir.
Thank you. Michael Whatley with us here on Talk Radio 1210. All right. 855-839-1210. So we got the savesies thing going on. Maybe Henry's slowly being won over. Who in the world, though, is in favor of what the Archdiocese of Philadelphia is doing today, saying, oh, no, we have the capability, we have remote, we're doing this by Zoom? Now, let me differentiate. Philadelphia Public Schools only has one snow day in their calendar, and they say that, you know what, though, we're all about learning here. How's that going, Philadelphia Public Schools? You are. And we'll do Zoom on these. Can you just imagine how much of a dog and pony show were we through with the Philadelphia Public Schools and most of the public schools with Zoom learning and the disaster during COVID? You've seen it. We all know it. It's very difficult even for adults to be productive for too long of a period of time around that. Now, the Archdiocese has the discipline factor on their side, but I object to it with all deference. because snow days are a rite of childhood. A sled, throwing snowballs, just being off and playing video games even, is part of it, versus this notion of, no, we have Zoom, and Zoom it shall be, and we're going to engage in that when we have the opportunity, and that's it. So I take it to mean no snow days, although I'm not sure. I have to look at their website to see if they have no snow days built in, and their calendar, their schedule. I don't know if teachers go to the high school or not. They have to get in. I don't know if they're on Zoom from home, which I'm sure the technology they could be. But we're at a point here. How in the world would we say no snow days? That's just ridiculous to me. This is another ridiculous thing. Now, I'm sure Vivek Ramaswamy's probably checking that box and saying, finally, they're listening to me. So are you pro-snow day? Do we actually have to go down that path on this now? All right, 855-839-1210. That's how you get in. I saw Matt Rooney on Twitter today, and he was kind of right at that point, saying, you know, this is a day why you do what they used to do, which is to wait, and then you make a determinant if you're going to be off from school that day because of the snow. Then suddenly I looked out. It seemed like a half hour later there was an inch and a half. Suddenly it happened. So maybe in advance they were right. I think they were right with school off today in many places. You know, I have to go place by place, but in a general sense. And it looked this morning like this was the French toast cabal. We know about them, right? You know, people staying home. Ah, oh, it's a great day for French toast. Dan's not, Dan's circulating around there. Amber, he's not there. I wanted a French toast tip from him. He's Mr. Dan, are you there? No?
Yeah, I'm here.
This is the French toast cabal day.
Yeah, the big French toast,
like,
yeah.
Because it looked this morning like not a lot was going to happen. I thought Rooney was right, then all of a sudden it did. Now, I can't complain. I'm in the Dom Dome. You guys had to slug it out and get down there. But what is the... You are Mr. Brunch.
Yeah.
So what is the technique for great French toast?
Well, we call it French toast, but it's milk, eggs, and bread. I really don't have much of a technique. I know there's some specific bread that's used often.
Croissants?
No. It's what is the best kind
sourdough?
Of French toast? Kalah French toast, the Jewish bread.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, try that, man. If you do that, you whip it up with some, you know, milk, throw it in the pan. Oh, it's delicious.
All right, I'm not a French toast guy.
How are you not a French? Are you a pancake guy?
Too thick.
Well, the pancake, though, and I've been under fire on Twitter somewhat. People are saying I want crepes, not pancakes. I told you the Bluebell Inn makes his pancake. I wouldn't say it's burnt, but it's really to a crisp, and it's much smaller than those giant buttermilk. As far as the
so, it's a crepe.
Well, it's a pancake on the menu.
It's a flapjack.
Well, it's a crepe, though, if it's standing bigger.
I'm all about that versus those buttermilk.
I'm not a fan of pancakes, no.
Yeah, too big of a deal. So I don't know if it is a crepe or not, but crepe away to me. Henry, any French toast tip from you?
He's a waffle
no,
guy.
No, I mean, I am a waffle guy.
Yeah, 100, I could tell.
Yeah, you just know it by looking at me. I'm just a waffle guy. No, a waffle is superior of those three foods, absolutely. No, I don't. French toast is probably my third of those three. I don't like how thick it is. I feel like it's too much at the point. Like the first couple bites, like, oh, that's pretty good. And then after that, you're like, I don't want to even finish.
Yeah,
this.
Remember, this is the ultimate brunch food, though, I think. That and
you
some
think?
Kind of mimosa of some sort.
Oh, I think it's got to be like some sort of breakfast sandwich, like a bacon, egg, and cheese. Like
I think the French toast is the elevated version of your, you know, bread-based
I guess
breakfasts.
It is.
You know? Because all you just do is... either throw it on a waffle iron or throw pancake batter together. But this, you actually have to do a whole process. And...
that takes time. Yes.
Yeah. Awesome. Right. I'm getting a trash. YouTube.com/@12WPHD. Allegedly, it's pronounced challah bread, not kala, as I said.
Yeah. I noticed I didn't jump in with any correction, so I wouldn't be impugned by it. I had nothing to do with it. Challah. Challah to you, too. All right. 855-839-1210. I can't check, Dan. Do you see the poll on my Twitter? Is it over? I forget the number of hours. At Dom Show 1210. At Dom Show 1210 on the Savesies.
It was 5 hours left.
Oh, 5 hours left.
Yep.
Is it about 72% yes?
69% yes.
Oh, God. Yeah. Tipping under 70%. What's the world coming to? And there were a lot of voters on this. It just, every year it goes down. And I say it's a sign of people not getting private property, even though it's public property.
It's not private property.
Well, it is earned property then. You earned it, and somebody lazy comes along. And
all right,
they,
so if I go mow the lawn of an open, you know, you can buy this land. Do I now own the land?
No.
I did the work.
Not the same thing.
Yeah, you know, it was overgrown,
well,
Dom.
What?
I did the work. It's now mine, right?
Sometimes you might be able to do that under law. It depends. Yeah, there are liens. There are all kinds of things you
can
do.
Are you in favor of squatters?
No, I am definitely not. You are a squatter if you come into my space. That's the very point. You are a squatter.
Yeah, you're a squatter if you reserve the space.
No, you're, yeah. You're a squatter if you come into a place that clearly was earned and marked, I might add, by some family heirloom. Like a broken old pool table I had that we used to put out. All right, 855-839-1210.
You go around mowing a bunch of lawns and staking claims to land.
AT&T and Verizon Wireless. Scott Presler here at 2 o'clock today. Coming up, the January 6th pardons on this January 6th. All right, who should Trump pardon and who should he not pardon? And there are a lot of people I think he should commute the sentence and or pardon based upon what's happened. And I'll explain the numbers and all that. Also, over the holidays, I think it was on Friday, I'm pretty sure it was, this Surgeon General, on his way out, decides to grandstand and tell people cancer attributable 17% of breast cancers to alcohol. Moderate drinking, even. One drink a day? That's just preposterous. Cancer? 855-839. 1210. Welcome to your Dano Show. Welcome in. Everything in play. Don't forget, take that poll on Twitter at Dom Show 1210. We got to get it up over at 80% of people to say that's common sense. You get to save your spot. Now, side question today. Epiphany. The Feast of the Epiphany, right? We're looking for an epiphany in the sense of a moment where something strikes someone and they change their mind on it. So they have an insight. All right, here are mine, then we'll get Henry's and Dan's. They could be real or fictional. Sir Isaac Newton, right?
Oh, yeah.
The apple. Yeah. Oh, gravity. Oh, oh I didn't think about it. Nobody ever thought about that. The Sixth Sense, spoiler alert, when he realizes he's the one that's dead also. And The Matrix, where Neo. Not the decision, but where Neo, does the thing with the, what's the guy's name? All right, the agent telling him, come on. He realizes now they can't do anything with him when the agents turn.
Yeah, Morpheus Mr. Smith. And Agent Smith, yeah.
Yeah, now after the initial Matrix, it's all pretty bad. I can't even remember half of the stuff that they talk about. But Dan, what's your epiphany?
How about Luke, I am your father? Debatable whether or not that was actually said from Star Wars.
Yes. That's a very good one.
And just an overall epiphany that I've had recently that nobody's going to give a damn about you if you don't give a damn about yourself.
Oh, that's a very good one.
Yeah.
You can personalize it in a little bit. It's all in the call if you give us enough on that. There you go. Henry, how about yours?
Yeah, so I'll take a real-life epiphany off the board. How about Sugar Ray Robinson dreaming that he was going to kill Jimmy Doyle in the ring, had to be talked back into the fight, and then ended up killing him after the fight.
Oh, man.
That's a tough one. And then if we're going to do a movie as well, how about the movie En Sondage? It is a French-Canadian film done by my favorite director, Denis Villeneuve. I won't spoil it. I won't say what it is. I'll just say 1 + 1 = 1. If you know, you know.
All right.
Okay, yeah.
It sounds like the Golden Globes have broken out here. By the Golden Globes last night, take away from this, it was the Ozempic, and I want to talk about this a little bit. Whatever happened to body positivity? Remember the Hollywood people and all that stuff about body positivity and et cetera? Now, I didn't see anybody. Well, yeah, there was a British actress, I guess it was. But other than that, I thought they were screaming, get her the Ozempic. And we got this duel where Elon Musk is in favor of it for himself and everybody else, apparently. RFK Jr., no. And RFK Jr., apparently over the weekend, Tucker Carlson says cane sugar for Coca-Cola, not fructose. That's what he's going to try to insist on. Oh, man, do you want Big Coke coming after you? His hearing with these goofy senators, oh, goodness.
Are you taking a pro-high fructose corn syrup stand?
No, no. I'm just saying that you don't want Big Coke coming after you as far as lobbyists. I mean, this guy better have a lot of protection here. They're not fooling around. They don't want to do that. I'm in agreement with it. I wouldn't drink it anyhow, but, I mean, it's obviously better. And I'm saying these senators are not exactly well-schooled on all this stuff. But they're bought. And big agriculture buys them and these others. So are they going to really challenge Kennedy Jr. on some of this stuff? All right, phone lines are 855-839-1210. Scott Presler at 2. Congressman Dan Muser, who got into it on Fox News once about January 6th with one of the Fox hosts. He'll be here at 2:35. All that straight ahead. Talk Radio 1210.
Tom Giordano. Weekdays 9 till noon on Talk Radio 1210. WPHT.